This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello and welcome back to LGIM Talks, our podcast on all things investment from legal and general investment management. Today, I wanted to once more go behind the scenes with one of our investment teams to understand more about how they manage their funds. Our active equities team places a massive emphasis on company engagement, meeting the companies they're invested in to know them inside and out. This could be anything from knowing how a company will respond to a competitor's latest innovation to how their strategy will hold up for the next 10 or 30 years. Here to talk to us about the questions they ask of companies are Senior Fund Manager Shaunak Mazumdar and Product Specialist Matthew Courtnell. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, yeah.
So let's start off right at the basics. Why is company engagement so important?
We look at engagement companies at a few different levels. The first one is obviously understanding the business strategy. So it could be at a high level, what is a company doing with regards to its strategy, mm-hmm. which markets it's trying to target, how its competitors are going to react to different things. But most importantly, as we are long-term investors, one of the things that we're always on the watch out for is as companies make transitions from what used to be a business strategy that applied to them in the past mm-hmm. to something that it will be catering to in the future.
So the question there is, what from you're talking to these companies that may have previously been successful and they've been first in their field, but the question for the CEO is, how are you going to continue to be successful going forward?
Yeah, so that's a really important part of as equity investors, what we're looking for is how a company makes that transition. And ultimately, what we're trying to figure out is, does it end up in a better position than it is today? So I'll give you a good example of a company that we looked at in 2014. It's a company called Intuit. What they basically do is that they sell accounting software to customers and small businesses. Intuit used to predominantly be CD-ROM drives. So you would buy a CD-ROM, put it into your computer, yeah. and load up the software. It was making a big transition from being CD-ROM, which is single purchase or single sale, to mm-hmm. actually being a subscription model. Now, what happens in the subscription model is that you pay your revenues over a 3 or 5 year basis. Now, as it was making that transition, what it would effectively mean is that the next year's profits was going to be significantly lower than the previous year.
As you move away from CD-ROM drives, which, let's face it, not that many laptops would have embedded it anymore in it, you are, of course, having to become a very different business than you were before.
Exactly. And so the question there is understanding the trajectory which the business is going to follow and what that means for its future outlook, both in terms of revenue growth as well as profits. And what it would turn out to be is that when the company did announce the change, the stock price took a big beating. Mm-hmm. But the end outcome has been that it's been a lot more successful now because it's captured a much bigger audience as well as a market.
It prepared itself for the future. Matthew, how do you see companies going through this kind of transition for the longer term?
Well, it's interesting. So I think from the perspective, as Shaunak was alluded to, from the active investing side, being able to see management 2 to 3 times a year enables us to talk through where these opportunities may arise for them and gain a much greater understanding of the reasons for this business change, for example. So it might be competition driven, so it might be quite a defensive move by the company, or they might be looking to pull in a new growth lever for the business to drive a much longer term future for them. And one or two examples of that could be something like Just Eat, for example, in the UK online takeaway market, or Cineworld, which of course made a interesting move in December 2017 when they merged with the US business Regal Entertainment, and everyone was worried about that. And I remember being at a Penny Hill Park conference with Berenberg, and the share price reaction on the day was dreadful because
there's so much fear about cinemas and declining box office takings and that sort of, like, the rise of Netflix and streaming video.
Exactly, but it just goes back to the point that you mentioned at the start with regards to investors being very short term focused. So it was not really seeing the wood through the trees and the longer term story there. And as the stock market's become more comfortable with that, so the shares have rallied in kind.
How do you identify those companies that really are well prepared for the long-term transition? How do you differentiate between what's a good plan and where companies, I imagine all companies, when they say, we are planning for 5-10 years, how can you then qualify those kind of strategy decisions and go, absolutely, this is one that's going to succeed, take into it? And what is it that you know, I can't think of any real failures off the top of my head, but what are those companies that say, yes, absolutely, we've got a long-term strategy, but that strategy really wasn't the right choice for them?
Yeah, so it's quite, I guess, an interesting question. This is where it comes back to the subjective nature and to a certain extent why we meet with certain companies is that you're trying to understand several different things. So first, you obviously look at what is the long-term trend. So we talked about cinemas and everyone's kind of moving to streaming and over-the-top content, and that's really big. So we understand what the theme is and we know that that's where the market's moving. The second thing is understanding why a company's moving towards a certain direction. And when you understand the reasons, you then have to go through questions with the management for them to tell you why the company is ready to make that transition. So in the examples that we were talking about, it's quite interesting because there what you really care about is the strategy and the ability of that company to make that move. When it sort of all matches up, then they typically have a plan. So they'll give you a guidance of, okay, we've thought through this. This is what we think the margins would look like. This is what other competitors are doing. And that's when you use your background information and having looked at several companies in the past and other industries which have gone through similar changes to say, okay, this sounds like a reasonable plan. And we would fall behind that.
Yeah.
And then the third element, which is quite important, is how much of that is well understood by the market. So like you said, a lot of people are skeptical when companies come up with big changes or big strategy changes. And a lot of times the market is going to say, well, I'm not going to re-rate your stock today until I find out that you're going to be really successful in this tomorrow. And through that company engagement, through understanding that transition that they're making, a good example of something right now is the auto industry. Everyone doesn't know which direction the auto industry is going to go. Electric vehicles are here to come. And everyone today thinks that, well, internal combustion engines are dead and your traditional companies that used to sell you internal combustion engines are never going to exist in the future. So it's a understanding the strategy, understanding the product, and the way in which they go about going about addressing that in the market is so important. And that's why we try to meet with companies to get to know that. A second layer is that, yes, you can meet senior management, but it's really important to also then meet the chairman, the mid-level management, and the people who are actually executing it. And that's where we get better conviction behind some of these transitions.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, well, it leads nicely into what I was going to say next, actually, regards to someone like JD Sports, for example. So one of the benefits we have at LGIM is obviously great access to company management. And as Shaunak alluded to, it's not just the senior level. So we did a recent a site tour to JD Sports' most profitable store, which is their Oxford Street mega store.
It's huge.
It is a flagship for them. And we were met by five different layers of management, which was started from the store manager, went all the way up to the CFO. And during the hour and a half visit where we went through the various floors, it was just, you know, incredibly insightful to have that layer of management at depth to talk through all aspects of the business, from what's the most hit trainer right now between Nike and Adidas to the underlying supply dynamics and how quickly it gets the new stock into store. And it's that sort of level of detail which, you know, is incredibly insightful for us as active stock pickers.
Really, you're building this holistic picture of a company, both and at its granular level of, like, what is it selling, how is it selling, and what will it sell, and how is it positioned for the future, but also the sector. How is it interplaying with the broader market, both with its competitors and with the major trends that are shaping the world and the economy?
And to add to that, it's basically what does the margin profile, what the profitability of that new trend and the return on invested capital look like? And that's the really important part, is that are you going to end up in a position that was better as you're making this transition, which is the key question everyone's trying to answer when you're going through this kind of a transition mode.
I imagine a lot of the meetings then for companies that you have invested in, to take that JD Sport example, you've already invested in it, you want to understand more about it. Really, is it a case of you're building conviction, you're like, this is a reason why I should keep holding this stock in my active equity portfolio, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, building conviction is obviously extremely key. It's 2018, from a stock market perspective, it was extremely interesting to see how the market reacted to companies that were, for example, increasing their capital allocation to new investment or new strands of innovation. And in something like JD Sports' case, they made a big acquisition in the US for Finish Line. And initially, you get the skepticism again. It comes back to a bit like the success around pop stars. You know, no one succeeds in the US if you're British. It's that. that sort of thinking. And again, it's that mindset where it's a British company going to the US. Are they going to execute on plans and be successful? And but for us, you know, we've seen management a number of times. You know, we've, as I mentioned, the depth and layering of different parts of the management team. And by doing, you know, obviously deep dive background research from the bottom up, you know, we're able to get conviction. But that only really comes from seeing management on a consistent basis. And as I said earlier on, we try and do that at least 2 to 3 times a year.
Yeah, so that way you're constantly being reminded of this is why this company still deserves a place in the portfolio.
Correct.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because then the other question is how do you overlay some of the macro elements that are impacting the world into the micro? A good example of something like that that we've looked at in the past is Alibaba. So Alibaba is one of the biggest online retailers in China. And late last year, everyone thought China was imploding. Growth was slowing down.
Everyone sold the tech stocks.
Everyone sold the tech stocks. Everyone sold China broadly. And what is quite, there's a quote from the CEO of Alibaba who often quotes Jeff Bezos and says, well, U.S. is growing at 3% doesn't mean Amazon's growing at 3%. So when the growth in China is slowing down from 6 to 5 doesn't mean that Alibaba's growth is slowing down from 20%. But it's, again, as you're meeting with a company and understand their business and why they're so well positioned, you can weather through that risk that the market says is right now macro risk to continue to hold a position because you feel that you have conviction. You can go back and read the notes and say, this is why I still like the stock.
Precisely. This is why I liked it 6 months ago. What has fundamentally changed about the company that would make me reassess my position right now, that other than all of this noise, all of this emotional behavior around the bigger story, has it actually changed the company, I guess, is the real question there, right?
Yes. I think as well, going back to the point on the macro element, which Shaunak touched on there, if we think back, you know, think about the airline sector right now. So,
a very unloved sector traditionally.
It's been tough. So you've had Ryanair who are dealing with their stocks, well, company-specific issues with regards to purely around obviously air traffic control and unionising parts of their workforce in the respective countries they operate in. And then you've had profit warnings from EasyJet more recently. And a good example would be that obviously that they're much more exposed to the Western consumer. And right now, given political topics, which are obviously going on in various countries around Europe and the UK, you know, that's difficult to have conviction there. But then you look at a company like Wizz Air, for example, which is a major Central and Eastern European base where you've got growing GDP and a greater propensity for travel. That's obviously incredibly encouraging. And for that, that's a long-term structural trend that they're benefiting from relative to one or two of their peers, for example.
Clearly, that if you understand that the market there is a much more supportive to this kind of airline, you can pick out this company as one that bucks the trend, as it were. And I guess that's what makes a good investment for an active equities manager, right?
Yeah, and effectively, some of the things that also come through on that bucking the trend is that a lot of times when we meet with companies who are customers or competitors of other companies, there's a lot that you learn about another company that you're invested in your fund or in a completely different sector, which is really fascinating. So I'll give you a good example of something that we had quite recently. So we met with Reckitt Benckiser, which basically does anything in the consumer product side. So they extend everywhere from all the way from sort of pills to baby milk powder.
Wow.
Turns out that Reckitt Benckiser is the second largest advertiser in the world.
I had no idea. That is completely surprising.
Surprising.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they're the second largest advertiser. Why does that matter? They can tell you trends of how they're spending their money, right? So the CEO or the outgoing CEO at the time basically said, today we spend about 40 to 50% of our spending or of our advertising on digital. Okay, that's in line with trends of what we know. But in 3 years, that number is going to go to 100%. Now, why is that relevant? Because it impacts companies like Google and Facebook and potentially Amazon.
No, of course. I mean, that's such a useful bit of, like, this is a one sector impacting another sector or creating opportunities, which through company engagement, you are able to connect the pieces to build a better model of the world of the future, as it were.
Yeah.
I think just to add to that as well, if we just purely look at top-down macro, and if that was our view, we'd have a very different picture to what we have being bottom up. And I think the way I'll explain that is, if we looked at just the, you know, purchasing manufacturing indices, you know, PMIs, etc., around the world, we would be quite worried with perhaps where we are right now in the part of the cycle.
Quite weak data recently, right?
Absolutely, yes. But I think that by seeing management, we can talk, I guess, more under the surface on more company-specific examples around what, where, you know, where there are leading positive indicators. And a good example of that might be something along the lines of the rental equipment market in the US, you know, where we're seeing a massive resurgence in mining CapEx growth, for example. So we're seeing much more order flow come through now. But if you just purely looked at the headline level macro news, you'd be very bleak about
parts of the world. You'd say, well, there's very little manufacturing activity. It's nothing. No one's really going to be spending that much more. Mm. But actually, if you look at it from a bottom-up perspective, is what you're saying, there are these pockets of very niche areas where absolutely these companies are spending a lot more for the future.
Yeah, but and again, you wouldn't get that by just reading a report. So it all comes back to seeing management. You know, in the hour we have with them at each time they come into our offices, we get to talk through obviously all sorts, just, you know, going beyond just the core strategy of the business, but what are they seeing from a trend and thematic perspective?
So these themes, I mean, I know, Sean, like, you've done a lot of work on these kind of big macro themes, but also how they can be applied to these concentrated active equity portfolios that you and the team run. How best do you understand and interpret these big thematic events into these kind of portfolios?
Yeah, so going back to, again, thinking about we are long-term investors, and so what we're trying to identify are some of these big themes that are impacting or changing the ways in which businesses are operating. So whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's the rising middle class in China, whether it's electric vehicles, it could be anything. And these are big themes which ultimately become big drivers of companies' profitabilities and revenues. When we're kind of going through understanding those, what's really relevant is understanding which companies are well positioned to cater to that theme. And now the theme, it's used as a broad brush stroke to explain something, but when you have it's better to be you know, in on a boat where all tides are sort of rising, and so you'd rather be in some place where you know that there's always going to be structural sort of movement towards something like that. So you know, back to the example of Cineworld, you know, we've seen even just our own personal activity in terms of how we're consuming content today. Right. So the way in which we consume content today is very different from the way in which we used or our parents' generation have ever consumed content. And that's a big strategic or that's a big change that's happened in terms of thematic. And so there's been a few enablers of that, which could be technology, could be demographics, it could be energy. But there's a few different very clear changes that are happening. And it's not just a blip in the ocean, it's actually happening in a consistent way. And that's why we're trying to identify the companies which win on the back of those.
That's so interesting. So what if I have understood you correctly, we're taking these kind of big themes in that, like, leisure spending is going up. Well, if leisure spending is going up, more money will be spent on cinemas. Well, if more money is going to be spent on cinemas, which cinemas? And that kind of interpretation. Or to take AI, as you exactly said, well, if the big data and much more digitalization is going to permeate throughout the economy, where and how is that going to be implemented, and which companies are best positioned to implement that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the challenge which we have with identifying that. But as you kind of go through those discussions with companies, you can say, these are the 10 companies that could be relevant for a theme, but these are the two that are going to be the winners, and this is the one that is actually doing it in a really sort of systematic way and actually knows what they're doing. And back to Matthew's point, where we go through not just the senior management, but actually going through the granular level and say, this is not just something that they're writing on their annual reports or something that they're telling all investors. This is actually part of their business strategy.
Interesting.
Yeah, seeing that in action is the key. And obviously, you know, we can listen to management, obviously, tell a good story. But, it, you know, they've got to be proactively trying to go after this growth. And one of our favourite terms is TAM in the office, which is Total Addressable Market. It's become a bit of a buzzword in the industry the past couple of years.
Very jargony.
It does. But with that in mind, you know, if you think about the premiumisation we've seen of certain product categories, and if we think about this, the spirits industry and how we consume alcohol now.
Yeah.
We've moved away from perhaps how we did that 10 years ago, and we've seen a rise of gin the past 4 years, and obviously Fever Tree has been a major player in that exponential growth. But likewise, obviously, that's also driving their financial performance as well. So themes aren't obviously just tech focus, although, as Shaunek alluded to, if you combine demographics, energy with that, the power of technology, there's plenty of developments in the market. Correct, yeah.
Absolutely. So I'd like to take this on a step for these big trends. And we've seen within the investment space and within investor demand, a big trend for more environmental, social and governance analysis of these companies and incorporating a much more holistic view of companies in that sense. Shaunek, I know you've done a lot of work within Elgium on this space. How are you applying ESG into the active equity space?
Yeah, it's a really sort of good question, and it's quite topical. It's interesting because ESG factors previously or have historically been something which has sat on the outside, and people on the active side sort of, for a large part, kind of looked at these things and said, well, does it really benefit me, and how should I really be incorporating
it? Where's the financial benefit, really, for incorporating all of this?
Exactly. And I would kind of flip that around to say, if it's not properly integrated in, you're slightly doing your own investors a disservice, because it is increased disclosure. And what we're trying to identify is, as we're going through any of this analysis in terms of long-term themes or what the trajectory of the business looks like in the future, sustainability is a very important part of that same analysis. And so what you're trying to understand is, what are the environmental factors? How is this company positioned? Are they actually disclosing on different topics? How are they moving their product categories from being unsustainable to actually moving forward? So a good example of something like that is the auto industry, which I talked about. I'll take a clear example of something like Daimler. So Daimler today produces about 2 million cars.
Yeah.
They're all internal combustion engines, which is basically petrol and diesel.
Yeah, the traditional cars we can buy at your local garage salesman.
Yeah. So Tesla has sort of come out and said, and has been the leader in terms of electric vehicles, but Tesla is not going to be the winner if we think electric vehicles are going to take off. So there's about 80 to 100 million cars sold every year. Tesla is not going to be the solution to that problem. What needs to change is the traditional auto manufacturers need to now move into manufacturing electric vehicles. Clearly, this is not just a mouthpiece for them. This is a change in complete product.
Oh, completely.
Obviously, we know that electric vehicles have a much better E and S impact than your petrol and diesel cars.
Yeah.
As that company makes that transition, and they've committed to 25% of all cars that they sell in 5 years going to be electric vehicles, which is a big change.
25% of the millions of cars
that they sell. And this is not just Daimler, it's been Volkswagen, it's been BMW. So there's a big change.
Industry shift.
And as that shift is happening, what used to be previously a risk on this company is that it's not going to exist in 5 or 10 years because everyone's going to move to electric vehicles. It's now moved its own business model to actually catering to electric vehicles. And so now you can see a future for it.
Yeah.
Going down the line.
And this is a major transitional shift. Going back to that long-term theme, the company is really going through a transformational change to not only serve the same market, but with a completely different product. And by doing this, it's making sure that it will be one of the leaders, the winners in this future world space.
That's exactly right. And the interesting thing with something like Daimler is that when we met with them, historically, the management has been very reticent to make this change because they say, well, the first times you start selling anything that's a new piece of kit, it's going to be loss-making because you have to try to get people on board with it. So how can we justify this to our investors? Well, that goes back to, again, because we're long-term investors, we can hold it through that period where it is going to be a problem to actually coming out on the other side where it becomes successful.
So by constantly iterating to the company management, like, we are your investors and we want you to do this and we want you to be making these big shifts because we're not looking at these short-term 1 to 3 year results. We're looking for 3 to 5 to 10 years.
That's exactly
down the
right.
Line.
I think just to add to that, this shouldn't be just a box-ticking exercise for a company or an investor.
You don't want 5 minutes of the meeting to be like, yep, we're thinking about 10 years from now and we've got this pie-in-the-sky idea.
Absolutely. And you've got to see results. You've got to see parts improvement within the business. And if we think about from our perspective, how we engage with these companies is extremely important. And companies are coming to us and they're thinking differently. I mean, I've noticed that in the past 12 months. You know, when we've seen companies maybe in the fast fashion industry, they're talking much more about, you know, where they sit on biodegradable materials. And then someone like Coca-Cola, for example, are talking much more about how they view their plastics and the move towards, you know, fully recyclable by an X given date and time. Yeah. And that's incredibly important.
Absolutely. So I'd just like to begin to wrap this incredible conversation up, where we feel like we've talked on all the major issues changing the world and nearly every company in the world. There are so many equity fund managers out there, and likelihood is they will all say, oh, well, we do corporate engagement absolutely very well to exact same degree. And we've built our model of how the world's changing, how companies are preparing. What makes company engagement at Legal & General Investment Management, or with your team especially, so different from everyone else?
Obviously, Legal & General is a large asset manager. Mm. We manage over $1 trillion of assets, which means that we are a top 10 or 20 shareholder of a lot of companies, which is why a lot of the companies want to know what we have to say, right? So that's just that in and of itself brings not just a privilege, but it's a very big responsibility for us as LGIM to sort of help companies make that transition through, because we are we have to do this, and if we don't do it, it's not our fiduciary we're not doing our fiduciary responsibility by helping these without helping these companies to make that transition.
We have a responsibility to our clients, who are ultimately the investors of these companies.
That's exactly right, and so allowing and encouraging these companies to make the right business transitions for the future is quite important, mm-hmm. as opposed to just extracting cash from the existing businesses. A lot of the times, what we've talked about is that we are aligned with these companies. We are interested, and also as we are investing behind them, we are completely aligned, and we are obviously long-only investors, which means that we don't short companies.
Yeah.
We don't look at investments on a quarterly basis or sometimes daily basis. We are longer-term investors, which means that companies want to engage with us, want to talk to us to say, hey, if we make this transition, you will continue to be shareholders of us. And as we get through that dip, and as we make that big transition, you're there and supporting us behind that. And ultimately, what that means is that the overall impact is much, much larger.
Much greater. Matthew, anything to add here?
While I would love to sit here and say, hand on heart, we have the best corporate access relative to any other player, you know, asset manager on the street, I can't do that. But what I can say
sure
is, I would love to say that, but I can't. But I can say that I do feel it is as good as anyone else in the market. And I do also believe that it has a massive impact on our ability to generate alpha for clients. Because to be able to sit there with management, and a good example here, we should wrap this up, is a FTSE 250 company who listed on the stock exchange around about a year and a half ago, who were very much unknown to UK investors because of the makeup of the business. We saw them 4 times in 6 months. 3 times in our offices, on a one-to-one basis, and a visit another time to them at their offices. And by seeing them talking about the industry themes, the makeup of the business, structural growth that's available to them, and how they deliver upon that in years to come, that gave us conviction in that particular instance. And I think, again, it just highlights how corporate engagement for us and access and management is incredibly vital as a bottom-up investor.
I feel like that's such a really good note to wrap up on, that you're investing with such a collaborative mindset with these companies for the benefit of our investors to whom you have such a responsibility, and that the all-important engagement is making sure that the companies and our investors are really prepared for the long term, no matter what major changes in the world happens to come to pass, as it were. Well, thank you so much to both of you for taking us behind the scenes with the Active Equities team. Thanks, Shaunak.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. It was really fun.
I'm really glad. And Matthew?
Pleasure,
I mean,
as always.
You can always say that you didn't have fun. Absolutely, I won't be so offended. Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our wonderful production team and our amazing producer, Holly McNulty. And listen again next week for more LGIM Talks. Thank you and goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.